It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Mark Gurman from 9 to 5. Mac joins us. So excited to have Mark on, along with Renee Ritchie and Andy Iannacco. We'll talk about the new MacBook Air. I've got it in my hot little hands. Also, the new AirPort Extreme. Some benchmarks for you and lots more. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 355, recorded June 18th, 2013. Go big or go netbook. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/MacBreak. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. Try five of their stylish frames for free through their home try-on program. For special expedited delivery on your purchase, go to warbyparker.com and use the code MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Macintosh and Apple needs in obsessive detail. That's because we care. We care deeply. Andy Iannacco cares. He's from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Heck yes, I care, Leo.
He's been with his show since day uno.
Practically. If we're going to be installing this revisionist history, yes, absolutely. I am
really?
I am
not there, since the beginning?
I'm there on the balcony waving next to you, our leader.
I don't even remember that far back. It feels like you've always been here.
Thank you very much. I like to feel like that wallpaper that's a little bit crusty and moldy, but we're moving it at this point. We require you to move all the furniture out and attack a bunch of the problems. So you may as well just leave it there. And that is the article of quality that I try to promise to you each and every, and the listeners each and every week.
We might as well leave him here.
It's not so bad that we have to do something about it. It's easy enough just to leave it there.
Who was on number one? We don't know because we don't have any information at all on that.
I can
show.
Play the actual episode.
No, that's not necessary.
Mr. Scott Bourne, Mr. Merlin Mann.
Yeah, it was Scott Merlin, Alex Lindsay. Yeah, I guess you came along a little later, but we do love you. It doesn't seem like Mac Break Weekly.
I wasn't Mac Break's little accident. I was your unexpected miracle. That's what.
Yeah. Your little surprise. The Stork brought him.
You should have stopped at two hosts, Dad.
Also here is baby brother, Renee Ritchie from iBoard.com. Hello, Renee.
Cousin Oliver.
Hi, Leo. I missed the brick house already. It's amazing how used you get to it in just a couple of days.
I know. I feel like I saw you twice in a row, and it's like, gosh, where is he now? You're back in Montreal.
I am. I went from the beautiful San Francisco to the sweltering hot Montreal, and that makes absolutely no sense in my brain.
It's amazing. It's amazing with travel and all that you could be somewhere else now. The human body reels.
If they just have hypersonic domestic flying, it would be a miracle.
And from 9 to 5 Mac, one of the best Mac, well, right after iMore.com, one of the best, absolutely best Mac sites. We refer to it all the time, and we refer to Mark Gurman's articles all the time. Mark, it's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I'm new around these parts.
Yeah. This is your first time, I think, yeah?
Yeah, first time on the show. Excited.
I'm really excited. We are always saying, Mark Gurman says, so it's nice to actually find out what Mark Gurman says in his own voice. So
sorry
welcome.
To be misquoting you, Mark.
Yeah, I'll quote myself. Yeah.
Last week's Mac Break Weekly was the day after WWDC, so we did cover quite a bit of WWDC. But now we've had some time. I got my AirPort Extreme a couple of days ago, the new AC edition. I'm on my... my new MacBook Air, 13-inch with AC, and you notice with no power plugged in because I'm trying to see how much battery life I'm getting. As far as I can tell, that's the big difference at this point. It doesn't. Did you get one too, Renee?
I did. It's got two microphones, which is like the only hardware change I could tell, and it's got that battery life improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got the i7, 8 gigs of RAM. You know, I probably shouldn't have. But I did.
I did the same thing, Leo. You know why? Because if you either go big or you go netbook. I mean, there's no excuse for not getting the maxed out machine and just riding with it.
Yeah.
Especially because you have to be very, very fine-grained with a micro surgery tool in order to put more RAM into this later on.
Yes.
So it's like if you got to eat ramen noodles for a month and a half to afford the max-out RAM, you better get the max-out RAM.
I do have to say that one of the reasons I wanted to get this is to see if 802.11ac, which is the new it's still draft, but the next generation Wi-Fi that is supported both by this and by my router and by my current Android phones, the HTC One and the Galaxy S4, if it makes any difference. And I feel a little foolish because last night I must have been half asleep. I tweeted, wow, I'm getting great results. But I realized it was exactly the same great results I got before. And it's really the limit was my cable internet provider, not anything else. I got 50 megabytes down, 11 megabytes, 50 megabits down, 11 megabits up. And ping time's around 19 milliseconds on Wi-Fi. That's pretty good for Wi-Fi. But 802, as numerous people pointed out on the Twitter, you know, that's the same as 802.11n. And it's absolutely true. I unplugged it and went back to N. And yes, it was exactly the same.
But do we choose to be excited that wireless standards are now so great that they easily exceed any home broadband? Or are we going to be upset that, copper is supposed to be faster than anything there is?
I think if you're considering buying this router, for instance, you might consider your internet access speeds. Because the only reason you'd see a benefit in AC, and I knew this because I'd tested some Buffalo AC router even almost a year ago, is in-house LAN copying. Yes.
So for me, I mean, the big thing is going to be when the iPhone or the Apple TV presumably get AC, and then I don't have to have it on LAN anymore. It'll actually be fast enough to stream all my video around the house.
Right.
Have you been able to fine-tune it for steering and stuff like that?
Yes.
The other advantage might be that if you have like spotty receptions at parts of your house and you don't want to have to to have interconnected base stations to get coverage, that maybe one of these AC base stations will do it for you.
Well, I did a few experiments. It works very well all over the house at exactly the same speed. So the beamforming may in fact be doing something. There's no settings in the airport utility to say, you know, turn on beamforming or anything like that. It looks exactly the same.
Beamform left. Beamform left.
Oh, my God. Get the children out of the way. The beams are out of control.
Fucking cover.
One of the disadvantages of AC is it's 5 gigahertz only. So it's very high frequency. So it would, in theory, not do as well through walls, through metal. You know, the higher the frequency, the more likely it is to bounce off materials. In fact, that's one reason some experts are saying wait to AD, the next generation, because that will be dual band. Have all of the benefits of AC, but also be 2.4 gigahertz. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to concur. I can't see. Oh, and I did some other experiments because one of the problems that sometimes people have, if you put WDS, if you set up a repeater, an airport express or an airport, another airport as a repeater using something called WDS, you know where it says extend this wireless network in the airport stuff. I've been told by our IT guys and others that that will cut the bandwidth in half. That was not my experience. I took the old airport Extreme, put it upstairs as a WDS extending router, and it did not impact. It's still 50, you know, 4 gigabits, megabits down and 11 up. It didn't change anything. I don't know if that's Apple doing something smart. I don't think it's an AC specific thing, but it is good news. If you buy this new one, you can at least keep the old one, extend your network and not slow anything down. In fact, now my house is just radiating, pulsing with megahertz all over the place.
Do you notice like microwave popcorn just sort of cooking itself in the package on the closet?
Yeah, it's marvelous. You just open it up and it's done.
And thanks to LTE, you get that all over tan, Leo. It's not just one frequency.
So I think the really important note to make, and this it's somewhat true of the air as well, I'll tell you why, is that in normal use, you're not going to benefit from AC. There's some special cases. You know, if you bought the time machine with the hard drive built in, or what do they call it? The
time capsule.
Then presumably, although I didn't buy it, you would see the benefit in transfers to the time capsule. I did try plugging a USB drive into the back because it has a port for that. It was extremely slow. I did not see any improvement. Let's see, what else could I, you know, until I have an Apple TV with AC, or Roku with it, you know, until more devices have AC, there's no benefit at all.
Yeah.
So,
that's an infrastructure decision.
Of course.
It's like, it doesn't pay off immediately, but suddenly when you get your phone in 9 months or a year, you find that it works really great. When you get your next version of your game console or your Roku box, you find out that it works great. I don't think that it's that the new AirPort is a reason to swap out your perfectly functional current AirPorts for new ones, but for the same amount of money, when you're buying new stuff, you know that you're going to get something that's going to be a lot more useful for you in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. So, yeah, certainly if you're buying a new one, I would buy the new one. Although, again, you might want to, if you don't, first of all, don't upgrade just because I want the latest. That's not going to benefit you. Second, you might, if you can, wait till AD comes out. Now, Apple's slow, so Apple will be at least a year before AD is here, if not longer, because they don't jump on this stuff. Now, I have to say, 30 megabits symmetric on the Galaxy S4. Via Wi-Fi. So that's nice.
I was kind of disappointed there aren't any more Ethernet ports. I thought the new giant size would let the Middle East add a few more Ethernet ports.
They could have, and I wish they had. It's exactly the same as the previous AirPort Extreme.
Which isn't quite enough for me, because now you have your Xboxes and your PlayStations and your Apple TVs, and the more I can get, the better.
So it's not going to give you faster Internet. In all likelihood, you're already faster than your Internet anyway, unless you have remarkably fast Internet. It's not going to give you much benefit until you have other infrastructure AC devices. It conceivably could give you benefit as a time capsule in terms of copying. And we've seen that on AC, NASA's, other companies, NASA's, that it does make a difference in performance.
And it doesn't look like you can easily add a hard drive to the AirPort Extreme if you get that in lieu of a time capsule.
There's no SATA connector, right?
Yeah.
There's a slot.
Yeah.
But there's no connector. And I think iFixit hypothesized you could solder a connector on. I leave that as an exercise for the...
if you're Kyle or if you're a Nantech, maybe you can do that. But not me.
Not me.
It's sort of interesting that they demoted the time capsule, because like the previous model was really just called the time capsule, and now they kind of integrated it directly into the AirPort line. I think it's called like the AirPort time capsule now.
Right.
So I know it'll be interesting to see a few years down the line if they only ship one model with the built-in hard drive, like it becomes standard. So I know, it's just interesting to me why they would change the name, even though it's minor.
How about a nice SSD time capsule where it all soldered onto the motherboard?
Yeah, that would be the way to do it, right?
Yeah.
Although I used a USB 3 SSD drive, external drive on the thing, and it was really slow. So I don't. I think it's USB 2 on there. It's not USB 3, that's for sure. So
it's too bad.
Yeah, that would have been nice, huh?
I also would like to see. Have you used the SkyDog Wi-Fi router?
No, SkyDog.
It's a router that really it's a good router, but what you really like about it is the admin features, where it has a really cool web interface and mobile interface, so that everything that is a pain in the butt about configuring and managing a router, like, okay, I have to open a port for this device, or I have to make sure that a Skype call will get the biggest bandwidth no matter what's happening over there, all the way down to I want to make sure that my kids only get 30 minutes worth of access a day, or access to Facebook a day, and that they can access Khan's Academy as much as they want all day long, but here are services where they can only use it for 1 hour a day, and they limit the bandwidth. All these really fine-grained ways to sort of fine-tune access to your house so that things happen only the way that you want it to. And although the AirPort base station is still hands down the easiest to set up and configure, I mean, it's basically it's almost ready to go before you even plug it into the wall outlet. It's all configured so quickly. I think that a lot of people really want to see that kind of ability to control who gets to access their network and what kind of devices get the access to the biggest part of the pipe.
I love this new thing of using your phone or your iPad to control stuff like your lights, your TV, your network. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So a friend of mine has the new Tesla S. And he almost has to. It's like sometimes he'll be running errands and you can't take the dog inside, but it's okay because through his phone he can control the temperature of the inside of the car, turn the air conditioning on, and the only fault in that is that he has to have a sign made up for the inside of the window saying it's okay, please put your, before you smash the window to quote rescue my dog, put your hand against the glass and feel how cold it is. I'm controlling the temperature with my iPhone.
It's magic. Skydog, by the way, is a pre-order. It's not out till September.
Yeah, sorry, but it was a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah,
and hardware is going out to people who funded it. But that's the sort of stuff I'd love to see Apple do, because you may or may not realize the benefits of a brand new wireless standard. You will definitely realize the benefits of being able to say Skype calls get as much of the bandwidth as you can possibly give it immediately, and my kids don't get to go to 4chan.
How much is this? It's concurrent N dual band. How much is it?
Think
of it. Ethernet's got four ports. There are companies that are innovating better in this realm, obviously. And the AC adapter, the 802.11 AC from Apple's, more than twice as much as others. It's hard to recommend it. Now as you said, Annie, easy, right? You just plug it in. It just works. In fact, there's not much you can really do. You just launch the airport utility and there it is. Yeah. $149. That's not too bad. That's still less than an airport
Extreme. That's Kickstarter price, but yeah.
That's Kickstarter price, yeah. And I would say the same thing about the MacBook Air. You correct me, Renee. I don't know, Mark. Do you have the new MacBook Air? I don't know. Do you, Andy?
No, I don't.
Andy, do you?
Not yet. No. No.
I got the feeling that was the case when you begged for mine.
No. I would have easily have asked for it to go to a worthy listener. Again, if it's truly no better than the other one. No. Like I said last week, I know when you're teasing me. I just want to see if you have any shame about teasing me.
I have
me,
no shame whatsoever about teasing Andy and that guy.
Please update Leo's lower third to say Leo has no shame about teasing people.
He's just like the shame tease.
Is a good thing to have.
But my experience is I got the i7, the 8 gigs. I can't tell if it's faster or not. I suppose a benchmark might.
They downclocked it. So it's not, the CPU itself is not as fast as the previous generation. And it was never, Apple didn't sell it as being faster. I mean, they were very careful in their presentation. They really advertised it as being the battery life machine. Like the MacBook Pro is clearly, because the MacBook Pro 13, it's like we discussed, there's no Retina for the Air. You want a Retina Air, you get the MacBook Pro 13, and that's going to be your big, beefy, fast workstation. The MacBook Air message is entirely about battery life and portability and being light and lasting forever. And that's only going to become more true with Maverick, because Mavericks, sorry, plural, because everything that they did there is going to really make that hardware. This is sort of like a pre-release tease for Mavericks in many ways.
Yeah, this is, if you already have a late model MacBook Air last 2 years, you probably wouldn't. It wouldn't be worth it to do the
unless you're on airplanes or live blogging
a lot. Now, this is too early to tell a battery life. And those of you who saw the pre-show saw me looking for a battery life monitor on this thing to see how it goes. I have, according to this, is only the second full charge discharge because I only got it yesterday. It says about the third of my battery life remaining in about an hour, 39 minutes, according to Apple. But I don't think it's had enough time to really calibrate all of that.
And you'll often see a change. So like if you're doing something graphically intensive, and unfortunately, a lot of apps use core animation just to do things like faster text rendering. And hopefully that'll change. But then the battery life will go down. And when you stop that activity, it'll go back up again.
Right.
My heart was palpitating during the keynote, because when I would engage Aperture or something, the battery life would go to less than I needed. And then when I turned it off, it'd go way back more than I needed. And I never knew which one to trust.
I would guess that you're going to get normal heavy use about 6 hours, not 12 hours. This is the 13-inch.
Mm. They did promise 10 hours of video play, which is iPad-like.
But that's not normal use. Nobody says. I mean, it's not typical use, let's put it that way.
Well, but Apple's usually very conservative and usually spot on when they predict battery life. Every time I've tested a device, I've rarely found it more than acceptable to range off. So if they were promising 12 and you get 6, that would be a very, very weird thing. You'd have to be doing like really intensive graphic stuff in order for that to happen, with intensive networking for me to even believe that it would do 6. But I mean, it's okay that they don't talk about the speed increase, if any, but because that really is the killer feature. That once you get over that barrier of you do not have to take your charger with you when you leave the house in the morning, because you will have enough juice to get you through the entire day, that is a killer feature. That's what brings, I think, the MacBook Air much, much more into the default Mac mode for so many people. You know, when they go into the Apple store, they want to buy a new laptop, they think they're going to get something that's big and heavy and thick and has a ports and drives. As soon as you tell them this is the one we have that will probably get you 12 hours over the course of the day, you will still have enough battery left to play games on the commuter rail for 45 minutes on your way home back to your car after the end of the workday. That's when you start thinking, maybe I do want an ultra compact, super slim device instead of a quote real unquote desktop class machine.
Yeah. So would you say it's fair to say you'll get twice as much as you used to get? Intel's only claiming 50% on Haswell.
No, I wouldn't say twice as much. I'm saying that for me, I was so tempted by the 11-inch Air last year or so. But one of the reasons why I said no was that, well, it's the battery life is good, but it's not. Again, I leave the house in the morning without a power adapter. I come home after having had a full day with this machine. It was just below that threshold. I think it was about 4 or 5 hours. But now that you have that full day sort of effect, even on the 11-inch, that really makes it a much more credible machine. And it's not just – and for those who are going to be saying, well, I don't necessarily go out and use my computer for 10 or 12 hours a day. Yeah, but maybe you come home and you don't – you leave it in your bag in the hallway and you don't plug it back in your charger. Isn't it nice that the next day you still have 6 hours of battery left?
Apple's,
so I think it's such a solid feature and such a user-facing feature. I wouldn't say that it transforms and redefines the Air, but, man, does it make it more delectable.
I guess all I would say is your mileage may vary. You know, people who test battery life typically will use some sort of automated system that I think does not really reflect how you're using it. So, you know, all you can say is you're going to get some percentage over what you would have gotten in, because presumably you're going to use it the same way you did. Would it be fair to say 50% more battery life?
If it makes a difference, we're going to be our battery test consists of coffee shops, so we'll be doing a lot of testing.
Yeah, and it's way too early. I mean, I'll come back next week and I'll give you a much better idea because it's only been through one cycle. But yeah,
in my experience,
go ahead.
Oh,
Mark.
In my experience, like Apple's battery tests for like the laptops, at least, you know, they never really lived up to what they claimed. I have the Retina 15-inch Pro, and they claim 7 hours. And you know,
it wasn't even close.
Three to five at most.
Yeah.
And like the only Apple product that I can honestly agree with Apple's claims for battery life would be the iPads. Like those are right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe the Airs are, you know, maybe they're more correct about that. We'll see. And also be interesting to see what happens with Mavericks. Like, someone should do some battery tests comparing a Mountain Lion new MacBook Air versus a new MacBook Air running Mavericks with the new, you know, app nap and all
that. That should make a big difference. By the way, the power nap is disabled by default in the energy saver.
For the new Air.
So I checked it and turned it on. Somebody in the chat room is saying that I shouldn't be using Chrome. The Chrome is a notorious battery hog, and I guess that's fair. I mean, I should probably use Safari.
It's one of the apps that just turns on everything all the time that it's on, so that'll...
Well, let me turn it off then. That's not
one of the things. Like, to Mark's point, one of the things that makes measuring Mac battery life more challenging than iPad is because the iPad is such a controlled environment that you're pretty much using it the same way Apple did. But if you're installing a lot of kernel extensions, if you're using apps that turn on things like Runimation, it's much harder to see what kind of real-world usage you're getting because there's so much variety that you can be running on that machine.
I have Final Cut running
the whole time. It's not going to get that battery life.
Yeah, that's the real truth is your mileage may vary quite a bit because everybody uses it differently.
I tend to test it in more of a Microsoft Office type of apps, personal sort of media apps. Usually when I do a battery check, it's within about an hour of what Apple promises. So on the Retina, I think it was off by an hour or a little bit more, but it wasn't as bad as that. But it just goes to show that this is the reason why we have so many people testing it in so many different ways.
Right.
It's the only by reading two or three reviews of a product are you going to really get a good idea of what this thing can do.
Well, I am taking Chrome out of I'm going to make my default browzer Safari, and we'll try it that
Safari,
way.
But you do have Mavericks, good.
Yeah,
you have to factor in how much battery it's going to take you to restart your computer three times a day. So it's kind of a trade off.
Really, do you find a lot of crashes with Safari?
Oh no! There's so many times when the entire platform just totally bricks itself, and I actually have an Apple script that does nothing more than harvests every URL from every open window and every tab and stashes it to an Omni Outliner file, takes every file that's open. It's one of these things. It's like if I've got like a PDF open or a JPEG open, save those to another directory, close down everything, shut down Safari and restart it. Because the only way that I've managed to keep like my MacBook 15-inch Pro healthy is by just having that kind of discipline with Safari, because it just will not allow you to be undisciplined in terms of keeping windows open that you're not using anymore. It's just Chrome is so much more reliable that way.
Which is why I was so happy when they showed it during the keynote and they said that they were switching, for example, to a very Chrome-like multi-thread per tab. A lot of the things that they announced here, I don't know if it was a backpedal or a sidestep or whatever, but it looks like the model they're doing for the next version of Safari is going to be so much better than the current one.
Sorry, I'm changing to Safari. I have to log in.
I'll send you my Apple script.
I'm going to need an Apple script. So, you know, that's I guess, very relevant is that how, you know, the apps you use. And I wish somebody would, you know, so much attention is paid to this on smartphones because, you know, it's such an issue. I would love to see more attention paid to how we maximize battery life on a MacBook Air.
We're going to do a lot of that because for us the MacBook Air is basically a mobile device. It's like one step up from an iPad. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let me just. Oh my God! Go away! Stop it. I don't know. Is this new? Apple wants me to add all my accounts. This also is very mobile. And as soon as I log into Google, it says, "Oh, can I sync up everything to Google?" I don't remember doing that before. Is that new?
They all want you, Leo. They all want every part of you.
Yeah. I think that's new. And there's now a very mobile phone-like control panel accounts thing where you can log into all of your different accounts and so forth. It's the mail contacts calendars now, you know, says, would you like, you know, which accounts would you like to add? And that's where they've added Vimeo and Flickr and AOL. And same thing. I mean, it's convenient to have that. It's very mobile phone-like. Anyway, my point, which, and I do have one, was that you probably don't need to upgrade to this either, except for the battery life. I don't see noticeable differences in speed. And I have to say, and you know, I know like I'm a broken record on this one, I miss Retina. I miss it badly.
Are the big pixels scraping your eyeballs, Leo?
They're hurting my eyeballs. You can really, once you've been using Retina for a while, it's funny, until you use it, you don't notice. But now everything's Retina. Even my Windows machines are 1080p now at this size. And you know, that means you're going to notice. You see a little bit of a jaggy and that kind of thing. Just bugs me a little bit.
This is the iPad mini of computers where they sacrificed everything for the battery life.
But it's fat. I mean, in the sense that I can do the thing that I do all the time, and you and I have talked about this, Renee, before, which is go full screen on apps and then swipe back and forth. You could show that. No hesitation at all. Just boom, 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 boom.
That's, I mean, game designers will tell you that programming for the iPad 2 and the iPad mini is like the best experience. The iPad 3 is horrible. The iPad 4 is okay.
Right.
But the non-Retina devices are still where all the performance is.
It's just not moving as many pixels.
Yeah.
So, Packs. You know, and I had an SSD before, so that's not, you know, it's fine. It's fine. It's just like the AirPort Extreme. Don't run out and get it just because you want the latest, greatest thing. I don't think you're going to notice a difference. And you might really consider the base model to save a little money. I don't know if you gain more going from 4 to 8 gigabytes of RAM.
I'm just worried about what software comes out next year that's really going to want that. Like I said, you can. There are third-party ways you can upgrade the SSD on an Air. It's not easy, but you can at least do that. And there are solutions. Like you can plug in an external SSD or an external hard drive. Whereas internal memory, once you realize that the reason why you're seeing the beach ball of death is because you just don't have enough RAM for the thing that you want to do or the new version of the operating system you want to run, you're out of luck. You just got to drop it in the shredder. Stage a home invasion, get the insurance money, and buy something brand new. That's the only way you can upgrade an Air.
I mean, the one thing to add is that if you've been waiting for Haswell, you'll be happy that you waited. And the price is even a little bit cheaper on the higher end models, so you get the double benefit.
Yeah.
Every other year, every other generation of Intel processors brings so much that you get for free. where you don't have to redesign an entire computer around it, or it seems. It's just that, oh, so this magically has better video and magically runs faster and magically gets better battery life. It's not as easy as that, but it's not as bold as this is a brand new display with Retina graphics. It's no, some of many things that I just thought were a pain in the butt about this are no longer a pain in the butt. Is that nice?
It'll be interesting to see what Haswell does for the Retina MacBook Pros. You know, this is one of the first times the MacBook Air has leaped the MacBook Pro in terms of the chip specs, right? So, like, the MacBook Pro has now been obsoleted in terms of processor by the Air. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if the battery life improves on the Retina when they get Haswell eventually.
All right, I got a question for Mark and Renee and Andy. Just help me, okay? This is one of the reasons I do these shows, so I can get some help. One of the things I like to do when I go full screen on these things is to lock apps to a particular desktop. I have to say this, you know, because of the full screen, Spaces is now suddenly very useful. I have multiple desktops, and I lock stuff to different desktops. So I have Safari locked to it's time to lock Safari to this desktop. So I right click on the Safari icon, options, and I don't see that feature. And yet I do, if I go to mail, I do. So can you explain to me why some apps allow me to lock to the desktop and some don't? Why that option? See, I could say iTunes should always open on this desktop. Anybody know that? Like, but I can't do it with iChat.
Well, I know there's a setting in Mission Control that you can turn off rearranging spaces
turn it off. Stay, the spaces don't move based on usage.
Perhaps because it only works for the full screen apps. Like iChat, it's not full screen.
No,
right?
This one's full screen, XChat.
I vaguely remember them turning it off for Safari because people complained that they wanted to have Safari on multiple desktops. It was one of the apps that they wanted to have everywhere.
Don't turn it off. Just let somebody not do that.
But also, like, multiple displays are really going
to
change.
Safari, I can lock Safari to a desktop. Maybe it's something in the app. I don't know. It's very odd.
And it's going to change a lot with Mavericks. The whole full screen, multiple monitor thing is going to be all new and magical.
All right. We'll talk some more about Mavericks and other stuff in just a bit. Oh, here's somebody's giving me, Dr. T is giving me a link to graphs, pretty graphs, mini battery logger. You complete me. I'll start running this today. Next week, we'll take a look at graphs of battery usage. And what I really want to know is the kind of thing that you see on a mobile phone, which app used all that juice? Because then I would say, oh, Chrome, problem, don't use it, that kind of thing. We have a wiener, so let's celebrate, and then we'll get back with more. Renee Ritchie's here from iMore, from 9 to 5 Mac. Mark Gurman, good to have you, Mark. And, of course, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by GoToMeeting.com, that great service that allows you to have meetings with colleagues, clients, prospects all over the world. Nobody stays put anymore. That's why GoToMeeting is a great way to work face-to-face with anyone, anywhere. We got a 30-day free trial for you, and I'll show you how to do that in just a second. But let me show you a little bit about the features you've got. People ask me this all the time. It's got HD video conferencing built into it. So they say, well, why don't you guys, instead of using Skype, use GoToMeeting? We've talked with GoToMeeting about it, but it's windowed. It'd be good if we are going to use it, I think, for our programming show. Because what I want to have, GoToMeeting has screen sharing, so Father Robert Ballister, who's going to host that show, can, you know, you'll see his screen, you'll see him, and then he's going to show Shannon how to program, so you'll see them. I think it'll be perfect for that. That's what it's designed to do. Multiple people in a meeting, you see your meeting people, you see your page, you can share, they can share, you can pass it back and forth. You can even present from an iPad, so you can say, let me show you the graph on my iPad here. It's amazing. And it uses the camera on the iPad, uses the camera on your laptop with the new HD cameras. You're going to look great. Everybody's going to look great. And it's going to be better than meeting in person because it's faster, more effective. Go to meeting.com, click the orange try it free button and use our offer code MacBreak. You can try it free for 30 days. And I want to congratulate our winner because we gave away, I don't know if you remember this, a lovely HD webcam. So that somebody could use GoToMeeting with HD Faces. We asked you if you would like to meet with anybody, living or not famous, who would it be and why? Our winner, Jonathan Cusick, who said, I would like to meet with Chris Hadfield to ask what was the biggest challenge he faced while in space. That would be fun. Commander Hadfield, of course, the commander of the ISS for a long time, just came back a couple of weeks ago. Jonathan, congratulations. That camera's going out to you. And thank you for playing our little game. You don't have that tweet in front of you, Chad? Didn't they give you a link? Yeah. That's all right. I'll show you some other time. Well, you know, we'll put it in after the fact. It'll magically appear right now in the edited version of the show. How about that? That's the power I have. Go to meeting.com, click the try it free button, and use the offer code MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support. And for the contest, we'll do more, I'm sure. Giving away more more stuff. Leo Laporte here with our talented crew. We've talked a little bit about the hardware launched at WWDC. And now let's talk a little bit about Mavericks. We're starting to see, you know, a little bit of stuff leak out of, I think this, some of this is leaking out of the developer presentations, right? How power savings works in Mavericks. I think getting Mavericks on, it won't need to have Haswell, but it will benefit from Haswell, I would think, right?
Correct.
I think it's a bonus. It's like icing on the Haswell cake.
Right.
You get a bunch of really, you know, OS level smarts that'll do everything it can to maximize the already great power savings that you get in Haswell.
Yeah. So I look forward to that. When is that? Is that the fall? Did they say a specific time?
This fall.
Just fall.
This fall.
Yeah.
All right.
Which is interesting because the prior two releases were in the early summer. So, you know, it's
they're
interesting.
Not quite that they're doing that year.
They're busy, Mark.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see why they need to launch it simultaneously, I guess, with iOS 7. Maybe there is some unannounced stuff between the two operating systems that link together well.
That's
because if you remember with Lion and Mountain Lion, they had their, you know, 10.7.0 and 10.8.0 mm-hmm. releases like in June, July. And then when the iOS 5 and iOS 6 came out, both Lion and Mountain Lion got major updates to address some new integration and compatibility with the new iOS. So I guess they can get it all in one shot now if they do both in the fall.
Massive fall again, and then another quiet springtime.
Right,
great.
I forgot to tell you, I got a Mac Pro.
I've seen it; it's epic.
It's kind of heavy, but it's smaller than you might think, and it's got the Cyclone fan.
Handyman corner.
I had Burke make this up because this is roughly accurate, not exactly accurate to size. So I think that's one thing you can't tell when you look at that. And I know, Renee, you saw it, and you did too, probably, Mark, at the event. Yep. So you know it's not big. You can't tell. It looks like it could be any size in the graphics on the
Mac
website.
Mac Pro Mini.
But
Mac
it's pretty
Mini Pro.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
Is the tube the new cube is what I want to know. No,
it's clearly the new cube.
Yeah.
I was thinking that maybe, like, just like if you want to disable a car, you stick a banana in the tailpipe. If you want to disable a new Mac Pro, you put an orange down the output duct.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my question is, if you put something on top of it, is it going to kill the fan or will it fly up into the air? We'll see how dicey the whole thing is.
How big the fan – depends how big powerful the fan is.
I predict that, like, the worst consumer for this is the person who has cats in their office because, you know, the cat's going to be sitting right on top of that.
Well, but I got – okay.
A jet of warm air right up his butt, that's going to happen.
I might sit on it. That sounds pretty appealing. The problem is it's small, right? I think, you know, we've seen the edited pictures with a cat curled right up in there. It'll be a kitten, little tiny cat. You can't really get a big cat in there.
Hamster's nest.
A hamster. It'd be great for a hamster or a small gerbil. A large gerbil. Small hamster. Guinea pig it would work great for.
Small snake of some kind.
Snakes. Snakes will like it. I think you're right. Anyway, we did this for fun, but it also kind of illustrates the size of this thing. The thing to look out for in the next 6 months is a rush of Thunderbolt 2 appliances.
Yeah. Desktop docks.
It's taken so long to get Thunderbolt stuff out, like a few years. I wonder what's going to happen. Are they going to have Thunderbolt 2 stuff out in time for this Mac Pro?
And there's 6x6 on there, and that can make for a really ugly desktop if you want to max it out. So it'd be nice to see if someone makes something that's actually well and beautifully designed that lets you sort of pull things away from the box without making it look like something coming out of the Matrix.
We don't know how much it's going to cost or how much these devices are, but I think I've been calling it the rich man's Mac. I mean, it's not going to be cheap.
well, I wouldn't say rich man's Mac. It's more like it's the really expensive Mac you buy because you're willing to spend $4,000 to $5,000 to complete a contract that's going to pay you $50,000 to $60,000.
Right. Yeah, it's really designed for the pro whose either boss is paying for it or whose client is paying for it.
You're getting 12, though, right, Leo?
Oh, we'll get them for everybody. It'll be all over the studio.
From now on. Well, that's great.
It's like everyone.
It's either spend like 10 bucks for one password, or you buy 10 of these Mac Pros, just have it crack every password you forgot.
There you go.
It saves me time.
Yeah. iRadio. Only U.S., Australia, and... U.S. I was looking at the Pandora. Pandora is U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. Presumably, Apple could make deals in those countries as well.
That was I mean, iTunes Match, they said it was going to be U.S. only, and it spread rather quickly.
Did it?
If you talk to a lot of the radio programs have said it's an absolute pain. Even getting into Canada was...
Right. Took a long time.
Task. Yeah. And we still don't have a lot of services here. So those kind of licenses are really hard to get.
People get upset when we talk about this stuff because they say, well, I don't have it.
We don't have Amazon MP3 in Canada still. They promised it to us in 2008, and it's still not here. It must be a Herculean effort.
Well, but again, blame the music industry.
Yep,
don't blame these companies. They'd love to get it in there. Apple mentioned, though, that they have 575 million active iTunes accounts. Horace Dedeu, as usual, with his devotion to graphs and numbers, has made a graph of the growth of iTunes. Pretty steady. I wouldn't say exponential. Pretty linear growth, about 500,000 accounts a day, 44% compounded annually for the bankers among us. But gross revenue per account seems to be dropping a little bit. Each of the current 575 million accounts generates about half the revenue of the 100 million accounts of 2009.
All those free apps.
Yeah, 50% decline in revenues per account, but you're growing overall.
Right. I think that in the report he was talking about how the fact that it's still a growing base means it's more than made up for that sort of thing. I think it really does speak to the changing character of the iTunes user, whereas the first generation was definitely going to be a lot more passionate and a lot more driven and consider their iPhone to be something much, much more special than this current quarter's crop, for which the iPhone is the phone that they bought. That they had a choice of two or three that were also very, very good. They bought this one because of whatever the reason they bought it, and they're not quite so motivated to keep, you know, cherrying out with the latest apps and the latest movies and the latest whatever. It's just the device in their pocket they bought to serve the role of a phone for increasingly.
So is it cause for concern at all?
Look at the final graph that Apple generates every quarter, and tell me that Apple's facing a problem.
Yeah, they're making more money,
I wouldn't say it's a problem, but it's just that it points to how the character of the Apple user is changing and has been changing over the past 5 years since iOS came out.
Right.
Where I think that Apple users are still, as a whole, the most motivated, and the most passionate, and the most loyal users that any tech company has. But that's starting to shift, where you can't really count on that on a person-by-person basis. So if it indicates anything, it means that Apple has to keep doing things like iOS 7. They have to keep doing things like all of the future hardware devices that are described by some of the technologies being discussed in violation of NDA from WWDC, that they can't simply count on selling the same upgrades to existing apps to the same base of people. But it's a good problem to have. They're selling to a wider range of people, and more people means a wider pool of money to dive into. So
right.
That's not a problem.
Right.
To Andy's point, I mean, having a small group of people that pay a lot and having a giant group of people that they could potentially get more money out of, cost of customer acquisition is usually much higher than customer retention. So as long as they have that pool, always theoretically they could get more money out of it.
By the way, we've marked the sound. That sound you heard was Mark Kerman's Skype connection dying in a bloody violent death, and we haven't been able to get him back. So
Apple got him.
I think the next Arduino project for somebody either at the brick house, or maybe I'll just build and send it to you, is I want like a warehouse style OSHA sign saying it has been X days since our last Skype accident, And every time there's a crash, you have to reset it to
it would
zero.
Always we'll be see. Zero.
Do I have to pay for more than one digit display, or can we just...
are there any, just out of curiosity, are there any Thunderbolt 2? There's nothing, no Thunderbolt 2 anything, is there?
No, nothing I've heard
of. The only
one
I'm waiting for is,
I mean, believe it or not, I mean, usually, like when the first Thunderbolt announcement came out, it was months before I saw my first real Thunderbolt product. But my inbox was full of companies saying, hey, here's our plans for to support Thunderbolt. We will have this this audio device. We will have this video device. We'll have this storage device, this RAID device. I haven't received a single thing about Thunderbolt 2 devices.
Right.
So I don't think that's necessarily a sign that it's gonna, that there are any problems adopting Thunderbolt. I think it more points to that... Thunderbolt is a very specific technology for a very specific kind of user. I mean, USB 3.0 works great for 95% of everybody out there where they just want fast data transfer between a storage device and a CPU, and having essentially an expansion bus to add CPUs to a machine are not anywhere on their list of problems. And that Thunderbolt 2 is designed to solve exactly that kind of problem.
I think if we're honest about it, what we're all waiting for is the Retina Thunderbolt display anyway, and that's Apple's not going to send us a press release about it.
Right.
The 4K
well,
Thunderbolt.
Well, storage is important too, though. Yeah, I mean, you want that 4K display that goes with this bullet, but storage is really important. High speed storage is really important.
Yeah, but it's sort of like what you were talking about earlier about having this this box that can transact data at very, very fast speeds, but it's not a speed that you're really going to be able to appreciate or notice. Right now, and until people have those 4K camcorders, they're not going to be copying data at such heavy volumes that they can really notice the difference between Thunderbolt and Thunderbolt 2. They can definitely do that when they're backing up like a half terabyte or a full terabyte hard drive at this point. But even then, people are sort of trained not to click the button, then lean back with a comic book and expect the thing to be done by the time they finish the comic book. It really still is a scheduled at 4 a.m. procedure. And when you wake up your computer in the morning, hopefully see that it's been finished. So it's not a user-facing problem yet.
Right.
Yep.
You know, what I did not do and I should do is test the speed of the SSD on here. I, as you probably remember, I installed a PCI 2 SSD on the old Mac Pro and got remarkable read and write speeds on that thing.
And battleship sized Mac Pro.
Really great. So the new little one will have PCI 3. Should get some very good results from its SSD. Let me just the SSD on this is pretty fast. Write speeds pegging the Blackmagic disk speed test and read speed. These are excellent speeds. Mm-hmm. Wow. Best speeds I've these are as good as the PCI Express speeds. It's pegging it. It's 600 megabyte per second read, 700 megabyte. I'm sorry, write 700 megabyte per second read. Wow.
The future, Leo.
Wow. I wonder if that's Haswell or they're putting much better. They use those Samsung drives, right? Pretty fast. And the reason I launched it, Andy, I wanted to show you. The reason Blackmagic makes this, of course, they make hardware, including some Thunderbolts, a lot of Thunderbolt stuff, for video editors. And what this test is designed is for video editors to see if they can write in real-time, high-quality video. So if you scroll down, Chad, to the bottom there, you see all those check marks. They're showing, well, can you use, which video formats can you write in real-time? And this is fast enough to write very high-quality video, all but... 60 frame 1080p in real time. So this is this is amazing. Presumably you're going to get speeds at least this good on the new Mac Pro. So yeah. That is a significant difference over the old MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. Like big time, like twice as fast.
Yeah. Also when you think about this was originally being sold as the stylish Mac. this is the elegant like L elite modeling agency like clutch handbag style one, and now this is about as powerful as anything that you can possibly buy at this point.
Yeah, okay, no kidding.
Fine, great. And
this compared to the original Air is amazing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Good heavens.
The original Air was a sluggard.
Yeah. That's the thing with Apple.
I don't know. It's not as though they always get things perfect, but they're always if you, in golfing terms, it's always a very, very solid tee shot that leaves them in the middle of the fairway with a short iron to get onto the green, at least.
Yeah.
I can't think of another desktop in recent years that was as odd and as hard to recommend as the first MacBook Air. It wasn't just the speed. It wasn't just the fact that it kept kept channeling the fan every second. It was the fact that, oh man, one, you almost no storage space in a world that doesn't really have cloud storage, and only one USB port, so that you can't just the idea of, I have photos on a memory card that I want to work with. And so having to attach the camera to import a handful of these files onto whatever free space you have on the SSD, disconnect the camera, reconnect your hard drive, copy those files onto the hard drive, then disconnect the hard drive and reconnect. Yeah, exactly. It was like the Mac 128, like swapping disks because you made it to page 7 of your term paper, and now that was more than the CPU could handle.
Yeah, I just meant that whole cliche about skating to where the puck is going to be. In the MacBook Air, you could kind of see the ultra small portable future, and now it's been a reality. And now we're looking at the Mac Pro and saying, well, doesn't quite make sense for this, and that. But maybe, you know, 3 years from now, we'll be looking back and saying, wow, that makes a lot of sense for what that hardware can do, and now, and our use cases now.
Well, I just want to.
I think that.
Go ahead.
Just quickly. I think that sometimes that gets overused for Apple. And you could also tell them that the Newton message pad was a case of them skating where the puck was going to be. The problem is that if you drive so far, if you set up your lemonade stand so far out into the woods that you go out of business before, you know, they finish building the road to your lemonade stand. It's interesting. They were definitely ahead of the curve. Maybe they were a little bit too ahead of the curve with the Air. I feel sorry for anybody who bought it when it spent, what was it, $1,800 for the first one that came out, because that was.
I was one of those, Andy.
Oh, yeah, me too. But that's our job.
You were doing research. You know, again, this week I am going to New York to pick up a set of Google Glass for which I'm paying an exorbitant amount of money. not because I think it'll make back its money, but because I'm a journalist and I want to write about this, and that is what I have to do. Thank God that we all have this ability to say, no, it wasn't because I felt as though I had to have this really cool, shiny thing that was really cool and awesome. It's because I was doing research. That's what I was doing. That I'm not a stupid person, not at all.
I've been running this disk speed test on this new Air, and I have to compare it with the speed test that I ran on. This is the old Mac Pro with the PCI 2 Otherworld Computing Mercury disk. It's faster on the Air than it is on my Mac Pro.
How does that make you feel, Liam?
Yeah, like on the very expensively upgraded Mac Pro. So,
thank you, Leo.
All right.
Thank you for doing that for us.
I'm now justifying. I'm saying, okay, it's good. I'm downloading Cinebench right now, and we'll see what kind of score we get on Cinebench as well.
That needs to be this is going to be my Kickstarter campaign. It's going to make $1 million. Where if you are like one of these like a on-site video editors who makes a lot of money by doing slick professional video, it's just sort of like a big, huge plastic ventilated fan induced sled made out of just like rolled metal. You can insert your MacBook Air into so that people think that you have a really, really much more complicated computer than you have. Right.
Yeah. Why not? Let's just quickly run the CPU tests. And while we're doing that, we'll take a break and talk about audible.com. We'll come back. I'll have the Cinebench results. This Air is looking a lot faster than I thought. Pretty impressive, actually. Again, and this is the i7 version with 8 gigs of RAM, but the base 256 gigabyte SSD.
It also just shows that CPU is not the only measure of speed anymore.
Yeah, well, I/O has really been the gating factor for a long time. Didn't they say, or no, they never said, but I think didn't people say that even though the clock speed is a little slower, because it's Haswell, you could expect performance comparable?
Yeah.
CPU performance. Well, we'll see in just a second. We're running the CPU test, Cinebench CPU test from Maxon. Of course, I got about 80 other things running in the background, but it's not exactly a pure test. Hey, we got Mark Gurman back. Mark, sorry about the Skype issue.
Yeah, not sure what happened. My connection's good. It just kept dropping. I don't know.
Yeah, these things happen.
But we switched lines and it looks good now.
Good, good. We're going to take a break, talk about audible.com. If you are not yet familiar with Audible, my goodness gracious, you ought to be. More than 100,000 great books on audio recorded by not some bored guy or, you know, putting in his day's work or a robot, but by really good voice actors who bring books to life. And anybody who's listened to Game of Thrones on Audible or any of the science fiction that we've recommended in the past, Peter F. Hamilton books on Audible, knows this stuff comes to life. I mean, really, all the Neil Gaiman stuff. In fact, Neil Gaiman reads some of his stuff. Neverwhere is so good. There's so many great books on here. 100,000 titles, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, radio shows. You even get, with a subscription, I'm going to tell you how you can get this for free in just a second, the Daily New York Times or Wall Street Journal Digest read to you, which is great. Look at all the great books. Now, here's the deal. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's the book a month account. And the first month's free. So the first book is free, first credit anyway, in almost all books. About 99.5% of all the books are single credit books. So you can cancel in the first 30 days, pay nothing, but that book will be yours to keep. Andy Iannacco, what are you listening? I always like to find out what Andy's listening to. What are you listening to today?
Easy recommendation today. It's a book that I have not listened to, but I bought as soon as it was available. It was on my wish list for months. It's The Ocean at the End of the Lane, Neil Gaiman's brand new book. Just comes out today. It hits all the high marks. Well, first of all, almost anything that he puts out on audiobook is worth buying because, A, he is that kind of writer, and also he narrates it himself, and he is... He was certainly, whatever he is reading, he reads exceptionally well. And so that earns a recommendation. American Gods, there are a lot of people who love that book. It's not my favorite one because I have found that my favorite Neil Gaiman books are the shorter ones because I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like you have to remember to drive on the left-hand side of the road in this story. You know, and his style of writing, his style of storytelling. And so the really, really long novels, it's hard for me to remember that, oh, I should be in the right-hand lane if I want to take a left-hand lane if I want to make an exit. And to me, it's a long time to spend inside that mindset. This is a shorter one. It's about 50-something thousand words. And all the advanced reviews and all the interviews indicate that it's different from what he's written before, and that's a little bit more personal. It's not autobiographical in any way, but that you can Amanda Palmer, his wife, had a really long but really cool blog post I think today or yesterday about reading it and knowing Neil and about how it's sort of like you could see a lot more of him in this book and his story and his experiences in this book than in any other book that he's ever done. She likened it to when you put, as an artist, you put your ingredients, like your experiences, your own personal experiences into a blender that Neil normally like then pushes the 10 button and it gets ground up so finely you can't see any of the origins of any of the ingredients you put in there. And this is like the blender set on a much lower setting so you can say, oh, I see where that came from. And, oh, I see that aspect of his personality. And I see, oh, that's from this thing. So I'm truly looking forward to it. I've got a road trip coming up next week and I'm actually saving it. I'm driving up to Nashua, New Hampshire, for a speaking at a user group there, and I'm saving this book for that 90-minute drive up there. It's going
to
be great.
I agree with you 100%. It's funny. It's just a coincidence because I just happened to mention Neil Gaiman and how great he is. I had no idea he had a new book out today, so that's on my list.
There you go.
Big time.
Divine Ordnance.
Yeah. Just love his stuff. Really do.
I just bought it too. Same reason.
Really, yeah. I mean, he's just really, really good.
Isn't it great to have that short list of authors where if this author's name is on the book,
automatic.
I'm buying it.
Yeah.
I don't even have to think about it. I know it'll be worth buying. Yep. And he's definitely on that list for me.
And it's amazing. You can go from Sandman to Neverwhere to this, and he's just consistently great no matter what medium.
Right. Right. Yep. Really, truly a brilliant guy. I got the worst Cinebench results I've ever seen. So I restarted and quitting everything and powered up here just to see.
I know it's called Cinebench. Could you call it something else? Because I keep getting hungry for a cinnamon frosted bun every time you say that.
I keep thinking
cinnamon
bench. It sounds like a movie program to me.
I'll run it again. And while we're running it, let me tell you to go to audible.com/MacBreak. That Neil Gaiman book could be yours free when you sign up for the Gold account. You'll also get the Daily Wall Street Journal or New York Times Digest as part of your subscription. I'm putting that Neil Gaiman on there right now. You can listen on your iPhone. They've got a great app for the iPhone. I highly recommend it. iPad as well. On every other device, Android too. Windows Phone even. BlackBerry even. Audible.com/MacBreak. Give it a try today. We're big fans of Audible. We thank them for their support. Yeah, I got like this, like much slower than any other i7 computer out there. I was getting like a 2.3 or something on the Cinebench. It looks pretty slow still. two cores, four threads, 1.7 gigahertz, it might really be that the CPU is a little bit slow.
It'll burst up to, I think, 3.3, but it's
right.
Sustained.
Right. Well, I've turned off as much as I can. There's still some stuff running in the background, but no apps running. And I've got it plugged in. I presume that it's using SpeedStep, that Intel technology, which maybe when it's not plugged in, it doesn't quite do the same job.
We're going to test a bunch of things. We'll test like Final Cut renders and a bunch of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just to see what the real world difference
this is.
This
is a real, you know, quickie back of envelope test just to give us some idea. Surely the disk I/O makes a big difference. You know, CPU, most of the stuff we do these days is not CPU bound. The CPU speed is not the limitation. I'm also curious about this new HD 5000 graphics. I'll do the OpenGL test in a second too. We should see
Apple's pushing OpenCL heavily too.
Right. Right. I don't
there should be a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. I don't know of any OpenCL. The OpenGL drivers are so bad on Apple that it's really not a fair test of the hardware.
Yeah.
But I don't know if is there an OpenCL benchmark?
Although
what do you guys use benchmark software, or do you just kind of do your own real world stuff?
We do as just because people want them. So we say like, you know, here's the benchmarks. Now this is what the real world answer is. But Apple did announce for Mavericks OpenGL 4. I don't know if it's 4 or 4.3 or what precisely it is, but supporting that, I know, probably make a lot of people very happy.
Yeah. All the you know, and of course, this Mac Pro is going to be OpenCL. But all of the pros I know really bemoan the very poor performance in OpenGL drivers, the current OpenGL drivers. So Apple could only make that better.
File all the radars.
I got the same crappy result, 2.67 points. If you look down here at the graphs, you can see other i7 CPUs running at faster clock speeds, doing in fact a much better job. So some of that might be the clock speed. What this does is a ray trace. Let's do the OpenGL test. This one's kind of fun. It's a real world driving game. I don't know if this is the best benchmark out there, but it is at least a benchmark, and I've used it before to see how well stuff does. It's going to do this little street race in a second here, a car chase, and then it tests the frame rate and so forth on that. This takes a little while too, so. We'll continue.
We need to challenge Craig Federighi to a Game Center game, since his name is now publicly known as Hair Supply, which should be.
By the way, rave reviews. Even the Wall Street Journal said he's an up-and-coming star. That's pretty good.
Yeah. The difference from last time to this time is remarkable.
I should go back and look. Was he not? Yeah, I don't remember him being very dynamic, particularly dynamic last time. Do you think he got some training?
Stuff's changed. Yeah, I remember like on his first appearance, like with Snow Leopard, like in 2009 and Lion the year after, he was just shaking and he was like missing the mouse when he was doing gestures.
He's nervous. Yeah.
Yeah, he seemed so natural at the WWC keynote. And what we did hear is like they got a bunch of coaches for, you know, doing the keynotes. You know, of course they had those before, but they kind of like upped the ante on that.
Well, it paid off.
Yeah, they did it for all of them, Johnny Ive as well, but he didn't end up going on stage. They did the video in lieu of that. But yeah, Eddie Q as well was seemed nervous in previous appearances, but you know, him and Federighi, they did a really good job. And you know, Tim Cook and Phil Schiller, they're also up there, but they always seem very polished. So
do you think they don't put Johnny Ive on stage because he's got a little stage fright? Do you have any insight into that?
Well, I know when they were doing the human interface meetings between Johnny Ive and the teams who do the software design, Johnny Ive, he did like this big keynote presentation, like in there, you know, usually when they have events on campus in that room. And, you know, he kept going on like design tangents and wasn't very focused on the topic. I mean, he was talking about design, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't primed for giving a full keynote speech in front of 6,000 people.
Right.
And you know, he does seem kind of nervous. I remember he did the MacBook keynote in late 2008 when they did that whole new aluminum manufacturing process. Right, unibody. But I don't think he's done any stage appearances since then. But he seems to like the videos. You know, those are very controlled. You know, they can film them as many times as they want, edit it, and perfect them. But you know, it's very different on stage.
What he did that British kids show. He won the McCracken Award or whatever the hell it was. He was good on that.
Peter, I think. Yeah,
he was fun on that. But again, that might have been somewhat edited. So the OpenGL results are also crappy. But no crappier than anything else I've ever used on a Mac. 21.8 frames per second. That's pretty typical and not very exceptional performance. I think the HD 5000 graphics are capable of much more. Try this on Windows machine. You'll probably get three times the results. And that's a, I think that's really more a measure of the poor
drivers. It's going to be interesting to compare that to Mavericks too.
Yeah,
good. Well, we'll save these results and
don't say publicly, but if you can whisper in Leo's ear what the Maverick results are, then
have that, don't they? But it wouldn't. I don't think that's fair. That's one of the reasons I don't do, beta softwares, because that's not fair.
Yeah,
and I got a lot of criticism, and I understandably about the critiques I made of iOS 7, but. Yeah. Because it is beta, and of course it could very well change. But yeah, if we don't scream and yell now, then it won't change.
Well, no, because it's not going to be the screaming and yelling of the people who are looking at the beta. It's going to be from the users like 8 months from now after it's been out for a few months.
Right.
I've been sort of disappointed. I'm sorry, disappointed is a strong word. I thought it was curious that there's so many people who have been writing very, very strong and conclusive opinions, both positively and negatively, about iOS 7, given that Apple has a history of they will release something at WWDC. It will look not quite like the same thing that they shipped in September or October. It's going to go through all kinds of different changes. Right. On top of all that, it's iOS 7 is such a departure from iOS 6 that a lot of it's just going to have to be how much are you pleased or revolted by the fact that it's so much so different from what you've been using since 2007, and so much of it's going to rely on third party software that finds a way to interpret and rearticulate all these new user interface mandates. So I don't think that anybody can say anything conclusive, positively or negatively, until September or October at the earliest.
Yeah, but it's still ugly. But ugly.
You think so?
Is there a benchmark you can run to test butt ugliness?
It's butt ugly. You know, it's a purely subjective. You like it a lot, Mark? You think it's beautiful?
Yeah, I really, really like it.
You're a little younger than me.
Well,
how do you feel about sugar-coated cereals in general?
Sugar-coated cereals? Yeah. I don't eat sugar-coated cereals.
Oh, good. All right. Well, that's a good sign. You're not a Fruit Loops fan?
No. Okay. I'm 19, not 7.
I have an 18-year-old who eats. I just bought, Cocoa Crisp, Fruit Loops, Lucky Charms. That's what they want to eat. You're obviously a little more mature.
I'm older.
A little more mature.
Those 2 years are importantly.
Family on Father's Day celebrations, whatnot, and everyone is really blown away with it. Like the way the icons fly in, they really like the multitasking, and
interesting.
Popular opinion, everyone seems to really like the icons. So,
just me.
And here's the thing too, Andy's point about not writing articles being conclusive about iOS 7. If you remember, like last year, when the first beta came out and the betas with maps came out, it was pretty crappy. And lots of people saying, "Hey, just relax, it's going to get better." And then
and it didn't.
After it goes public, full backlash, and Scott Forstall is fired. So,
But it's. It just feels a little bit like reviewing a movie based on an early cut.
A trailer.
They released it though, Andy.
No, they didn't. You can't get this unless you pay $100 and also agree that you're not going to talk to anybody about what you've seen in this. That's not a public release.
Oh no, I wasn't talking about the running software. I was talking about what they showed at the keynote.
Yeah, well. but that's that stuff is very, very pretty.
That's a matter of taste.
Then. I mean, it's a matter of personal
not the
taste.
Word that leapt to mind.
I'm not talking about people shouldn't even say I personally like it or I personally don't like it. But occasionally you hear people saying, oh well, this is going to be a disaster and oh what a horrible step backward and I hate this and this is terrible and it's an awful step backward. Maybe your first impressions are spot on and maybe they're completely wrong.
Right.
But I just think that they should be presented in the proper context, that this is something that is still several months away from being released. And also it's missing the context of the world that it's going to be released into. So it's because I did spend about an hour with it, and that's about as much as I'm willing to spend before I go under NDA on it. And there are a lot of things I really liked. The multitasking is just thank you. Whoever, if there was a good reason for Palm to go out of business, it's because Apple could then hire on some people and get some great ideas for the OS. There are a lot of great ideas that I've been hoping to see in iOS for years that are showing up. And there's some things that I thought, oh, is that really going to be the way that worked? Oh, hey, and also the ultimate and the snarky and uncalled for comment of that a user can also, can have, and also the comment that you think of at least three times per hour when using something brand new. Say, you know what you should try doing? I think the developer should try, I don't know, using their software once or twice. Of course, it's not like that. But there are a couple moments like that where it's like, oh, so that's how we're unlocking the screen now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The biggest difference for me with iOS 7 as opposed to different years is that other years, the stuff on there was basically finished. Like they might change the way a background looked, like they might change it to linen instead of the whatever it was before, the big square backgrounds. But this one, you open it up and you can see that on Apple.com or in the keynote, there's just built-in apps they haven't shown off yet. And the ones they did show off were a subset of those that looked much better and much more polished. And that simple fact alone tells me that, you know, this was a much earlier beta than they've ever released before. The iPad version was, you know, stopped. They didn't even release a beta for that. This is far earlier along the process than we've ever had before. And that leads me to believe that while they are in there finishing those other apps, they'll be in there doing a lot of stuff. And I think that what we see in September might be different than what we see now. And if you still have those issues, it's absolutely fair to go after them. And I do like, to Leo's point, that people are complaining now, because if they think, for example, our grid is great, and we're like, no, you have to stop the acceleration way before you get to the edge of the icon. And they hear that, and they're more open to that kind of stuff because there's not one guy deciding what color blue is the icon anymore. I think it behooves really good designers and good developers to express a lot of opinions.
Look what Microsoft did with Windows 8. They did not listen. And then they now have to, as my friend Paul Thurrott says, take a mulligan and change it.
Yeah.
And so I presumably part of the beta process is seeing how people react. I'm curious though, Mark, because your family, are they all current iPhone users, or are they in the position where they might be saying, gee, should my next phone be the next generation iPhone or the next generation Android phone?
Now, everyone I showed it to was a iPhone user since maybe first, second, or third generation. So they've become really, really used to the platform.
And they're not considering changing away from it.
Oh, no. They're just so addicted to the apps and just so easy to use. I mean, like, when I put it iOS 7 this way back in April, like, it's fresh but familiar. It really works the same way. It's just like a real new coat of paint. There's not many changes in terms of functionality. It's
well,
just,
and that's
looks
my
different.
Point. That's what's, I think, interesting is that Apple isn't trying to keep up with Android particularly. A little bit, but not to the point where it would make your family unhappy.
Right, they're doing the right stuff. Like they're throwing in some things that you're like, ooh, like an ooh-ah moment, like the parallax and maybe like the multitasking, but also some more functional stuff like AirDrop. And the new Photos app is actually one of my favorite features from what I've seen on Apple.com and then Keynote. It's just the way it organizes everything. It's great. And I think lots of people are really going to like iOS 7. And, you know, just like Renee was saying, I don't doubt that stuff will change, but I think the general picture is there.
Right.
Yeah, it might just need a second coat of paint in some place.
It's hideous to me.
Yeah.
But see, I'm not the market, so, I've already made that switch.
Also, using it, I mean, when you see it, Leo, it's different. Like, I had reservations when I first saw it. It was so different, and I didn't know how much of that was change aversion. But I tried it. Some of my friends have tried it now. And when you use it, that was, to me, the biggest change is this gamification. I mean, they hired, this was on Twitter. I don't know if this was ever disclosed or not, but I never heard about it under NDA. They hired the guy who did Quake 2 Tournament to build this 3D graphics engine and all these particle effects. And this entire system is gamified. And it's when you're in there using some of these apps, it's like playing a game. It's not only delightful, but it's engaging. It makes you want to use it more. And that's a profound change. That's like that. I was begging for this. I don't want them to just catch up with Android. Every iOS 7 want list I saw was a list of Android or other software. And I didn't want that. I'd buy an Android if I wanted this. I wanted the next thing. And this isn't all the way there, but the idea of gamified 3D interface, I think, I can't wait to see what developers do with this over the next 6, 12 months.
Well, and this plays to a strength they have because they do their own chip design. They have some very sophisticated hardware, and it's tightly coupled to the OS, so they can do things like these particle effects and build it into the hardware in ways that others can't.
And it's a champ with, as much as we make fun of the Mac on GL, the iPhone was built with an interface based on OpenGL, and that gave us iOS gaming. And now this stuff, it's hard to imagine that all this stuff won't trickle down to developers too and just give them a lot of this stuff for free.
Yeah. I mean, one of the subtler things about iOS 7, again, given my limited experience with it, is just you notice immediately, my God, the frame rate in here is just jacked up to an insane level. The motion, I mean, on Android and on all kinds of other multi-touch devices, the scrolling is perfectly fine. It's even fluid. It's even liquid. But that's just the iOS 7 on an iPhone 5. It just takes it to a whole new level. It really just it's like a photo on air skates. But the question is going to be, like, how much is this? I mean, it's the question is going to be how much of these effects are going to translate into making a better phone versus making a cooler phone or making a more beautiful phone. And making something more beautiful is actually a practical feature because it makes the device more pleasant to use and the environment a more pleasant place to be. I would hope to see an iOS 8 some changes in philosophy. And we're seeing some of that stuff in iOS 7, where we're seeing Apple's trying to find ways to allow developers to have more access into processes and more ways of talking to hardware and more ways of talking to other pieces of software. That's the sort of stuff that I'll be more interested in when it actually happens.
Well, I'll defer judgment, of course, and you know I'll buy one, but... God, I just think it looks hideous.
Just look at those demos. I mean, they're running OpenGL shaders. I mean, they've got blur on almost all the time, and they're still hitting that frame rate.
That's impressive. It's very snappy. There's no question about that. And that's on an iPhone 5.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, as much as some people say it looks like Windows Phone or it looks like Android, I mean, it ended up looking in some ways similar. But the philosophy, this is not
Look how
Metro,
fast that
any,
cover flow. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, this is like that with everything turned on again, which is crazy.
And I think that the other thing we don't know, but I bet you there'll be a very good battery life on this thing. I think they're paying a lot of attention to that. They should, because that is becoming a big differentiator in phones. If you had 2-day battery life on something like this, which I think is doable with the right OS support for, coalescing events and things like that, that would get people's attention.
And what I liked about Apple this year is that they were so careful, because some years they've really turned off developers by the way that they just phrase things. And this year, they could have said, we're taking over multitasking, we're taking over processes, you'll do what we tell you. But they didn't. They kind of told them, look, this is the kind of smarts we're putting in there. So we'll just, the GPS turns on, we'll just automatically put your GPS events in there. You have a good radio signal. Okay, we'll do this now. We won't do it when you're on a weak radio signal and we drain your battery. And that seems like you're adding value to the performance and the usability of their product. And that makes them really happy. So they're more likely to use your stuff.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I think it's a challenging world, and it gets increasingly challenging for Apple, that there are going to be people like Mark's family who are committed to the platform. I'm very curious what their reaction will be in the long run.
We'll see.
Colors and icons are really a matter of taste. That's not about the spec at all. And people go along with it. They get used to it.
But spatial place.
I feel like the analogy that I keep coming back to is it's sort of like a company has invented the first digital synthesizer and they're selling it to musicians. And the demo makes you think one thing about it.
Right.
And it's going to maybe it's a positive reaction, maybe it's a negative one. But it's not until 100, 1,000 musicians get their hands on it and use those tools to build the things that they want to build that we're going to see exactly how good this mechanism is. It could be that it's 10 times better than even Apple is saying it is.
Right. Let's take a break. We are talking to Andy Iannocco, Mark Gurman from 9 to 5 Mac, his first time here. Nice to have you, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Renee Ritchie about all things Macintosh. Our show today brought to you by my glasses provider. This is an interesting advertiser. Have you heard about Warby Parker? One of the things that people got that Warby got attention, and I don't know if it's true or not, it was the rumor that they were going to be called in by Google to stylish up the Google Glass. What Warby is a startup about ordering eyeglasses. You'd think there's nothing new in the world. Well, I got to tell you that the eyeglass business is kind of monopolized by one company, and they have really inflated the prices of eyeglasses. If you wear prescription glasses, what did you pay last time? $400, $500, $600 for a pair of glasses? It can be done better, and Warby Parker is determined to do so. They have glasses starting at just $95 with lens. Their titanium collection, which is gorgeous, starts at $145, including prescription lenses. With premium Japanese titanium and French non-rocking screws, all glasses always include anti-reflective and anti-glare coating, a hard case, and cleaning cloth. The case is beautiful, by the way. But you might say, but Leo, you might say, I can't order my glasses. Wait a minute, they have Man of Steel glasses? Clark Kent glasses? I love it. You might say, I can't order my glasses on the web, on the internet. I need to try them on. Well, Warby Parker has thought about that. They are using the same beautiful glasses sold in boutiques, available at very low prices, classic vintage styling, no more bland, overpriced eyewear, and you can try before you buy. So here's what happens. If you go to Warby Parker, you can try do the free home try-on program. Actually, Chad, why don't you go in there? Because it's great, because what you do is you browse through the frames at Warby, and you add them to your try-on. You can get as many as, I think, 5 frames sent to your house. You'll get this special frame box. Here's the box. And these were my try-ons. So these are frames that I said, oh, I'd like to look at the Rutherford brushed granite tinted demo, because I was buying prescription sunglasses. So I got, these are actually the ones that I end up getting. So I tried them on. I said, oh, yeah. Looked in the mirror. I asked my friends, what do you think? Then we tried some other ones on. And then, you know, they've got a prepaid mailer. You send it back. And then within just a short period of time, you get your own glasses with your own prescription right there. They don't have to be prescription. They have sunglasses, too. The free home try-on is great. In fact, when you use the offer code MACBREAK, you'll get expedited shipping. The turnaround will be even faster. So, yeah, you just pick a pair. I want Superman Clark Kent glasses. I love that. I think that's hysterical. They have monocles, too. Are there monocles back in stock? Click the monocle up there at the top, Chad. It's on the menu bar. Because they were out of stock because they were so popular, you couldn't do the try-on. Can you do? Yeah, you can. Good. So if you want the Colonel, only $50. Look how good you'll look. You think that's a joke? No, my friend. You may have Google Glass, but I've got Google Monocle.
With like 5 mustaches to try as well?
They should send you the mustaches. I think, Andy, you need a monocle. Isn't that great? WARBYPARKER.com. Just go there, browse around. If you see some frames you want to try, use the offer code MACBREAK for expedited shipping, and you'll get your trial box and a great pair. I'm really happy with my Warbys. I love them. That's what I'm going to call them, Warbys. You know where the name comes from? This is a test of your literary acumen. Anybody? Two of, you wouldn't probably know this. They're apparently fans of Jack Kerouac. And the names did not appear in any of his published works, but in his personal journals, Zag Parker and Warby Pepper. And they liked the name so much they took it as their name. But they do feel like, cause since Kerouac inspired a generation to take the road less traveled and to see the world through different lenses, that there might be a good name for their company. Isn't that great? I like these guys a lot, and I really like their product. You're going to like it, too. WarbyParker.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK. The expedited shipping. I love my Warbys. This is the box with the. See, get the shipping label. I never sent it back. I kept it. But do send it back. They said they allowed me to keep it because they said, well, you can show it just to so people see what you get when you do the home try on. Moving right along. I'm not going to talk about the ebook trial. It's moving along. They got smoking gun emails from Steve Jobs. It turned out not to be a smoking gun. It wasn't really. It was a discarded draft. The whole issue with this trial, which is ongoing right now, is that before Apple came along with the iBook store, ebooks price was basically set by Amazon. They just said, no, we're going to charge $9.99, and that's it. And publishers take it or leave it. And since there was no choice, Amazon had a massive monopoly, they took it. Along comes Apple, and they say, hey, you know what? You can price it any way you want to as long as it's within a certain, you know, reasonable limit, the so-called agency pricing model. We take a cut, just as they do with iTunes. You set the actually, iTunes is the other way, isn't it? iTunes is a fixed price.
Similar to the App Store model.
App Store would be a better model, yeah. Right. All of the publishers have now settled. It's just Apple as the lone defendant, but Amazon and others are claiming price fixing. Even though, if you ask me, this seems like a fair thing to do. But let the publishers decide. Anyway, I don't know what more to say about that. Apple's commitment to customer privacy. Some took this page on Apple's website. This is in response to the NSA spying issue. And everybody has responded, Facebook, Google, and so forth. Apple says between December 1st, 2012 and May 31st of this year, they received 4,000 to 5,000 requests from U.S. law enforcement. That's everybody from the feds on down to local police. And that's the way everybody's doing it. They have to mush these numbers together. Between 9 and 10,000 accounts or devices were specified in those requests. But they point out the most common form of request comes from police investigating robberies and other crimes, searching for missing children, trying to locate a patient with Alzheimer's disease, or hoping to prevent a suicide. So it's not always an NSL letter. They're not allowed to break out the number of NSL letters, however. And Apple says, we are committed to customer privacy. We've always placed a priority on protecting our customers' personal data. We do not collect or maintain a mountain of personal details about our customers in the first place. There are certain categories of information which we do not provide to law enforcement or any other group because we choose not to retain it. For example, conversations which take place over iMessage and FaceTime are protected by end-to-end encryption so no one but the sender or receiver can read them. Now, this is answer to the question that we had. Apple cannot decrypt that data.
Yep, absolutely.
That's interesting.
I've heard that's absolutely true as well.
Similarly, we do not store data related to customers' location, map searches, or Siri requests in any identifiable form. As we know, that doesn't mean it can't be identified if you get enough of that data, but they don't match your name to your Siri request.
It's not part of their business.
Right. We'll continue to work hard to strike the right balance between fulfilling our legal responsibilities and protecting our customers' privacy as they expect and deserve. This seems like a good statement from Apple. Pretty clear.
Yeah. And it's also a very, very long-awaited response to things like the Patriot Act that we all have known that I think a lot of the ick factor of domestic surveillance has been that we have these agencies that now have these broad powers to observe our transactions, but they don't have to talk about how they're using it, how many times they're using it. Companies that are give up this information don't have the ability to provide their own reports, and it's just great that now these companies who maybe the public perception was, oh, look, they're arm in arm with the government. They don't care about privacy. They're saying, well, look, we can't do that because we don't want to go to jail. But now that we have the ability to do this, we can give you a finer grained answer to the question of what do we do with your data? What happens to it? And so imaginations can really go wild when you think about how badly this kind of thing could be abused. And so it's understandable that people are sort of gravitating towards worst case scenario. So it's great that companies are now getting empowered to actually talk more directly about this sort of thing.
I will point out that Steve Gibson on Wednesday talked a little bit about his suppositions and not based in fact, of course, because nobody really knows about what Prism's up to. But one of the things he supposed, and I think that more and more we're starting to see evidence that he was accurate, is that, in fact, the NSA and the feds don't go directly to Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Yahoo and watch what's going on in the servers.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean they can't. They just go upstream a little bit to their internet service providers, and they capture the data there. So Apple may rightly say, no, they're, you know, as they have in Facebook and Google, too, they're not in our servers. What are you talking about? But if they're tapping Cogent or Level 3, right at the source, they're getting all the same data as if they were in Apple servers. So while this response from Apple is welcome, don't assume it doesn't mean that you aren't being spied on. We don't know what's going on. That's the truth of it. And I turned on, you know, there's a, well, I'll save it for my pick. There's a very easy way to encrypt your Apple mail. You might as well do that. How about picks of the week? You want to do that, guys?
Yes, please.
Sure.
Couple of real quick notes before we get to that. From Microsoft Office Mobile for the iPhone is now available in the App Store if you are an Office 365 Home Premium or Pro Plus subscriber. That's good news. You can now look at, I guess, documents.
And lightly edit
documents. In Office on the iPhone.
Yeah. Worst product name ever and no iPad version.
Yeah. Office Mobile for iPhone.
I think it's the whole, on the App Store, it says something like Office 360 for Office subscription.
Well, they want to emphasize that it's not any good to you if you don't do the monthly subscription, which I do. So I'll try it, and let you know. AT&T is starting to roll out FaceTime over cellular. So that's interesting. That means that limitation wasn't Apple's limitation. The carriers didn't want you to use 3G for FaceTime. So if you have an AT&T iPhone, watch for it. Both LTE and HSPA Plus support for FaceTime.
It's interesting because we got MMS a year in Canada before you got it in the U.S., and we had FaceTime over cellular for a long time. They're evil companies to you there, Leo.
Yeah, it's the phone company. Blame them.
It's interesting because like FaceTime, I thought it was rolling out for a while now, the FaceTime over cellular for AT&T. Verizon for sure has had it for a while. Maybe they're just expanding it.
It wasn't nationwide.
Could have been like select places.
Yeah, it was like in Maryland.
You can FaceTime in Maryland.
Yeah. And BMW says, we ain't going to change the architecture of our cars for Apple. Well, maybe.
Oh, yeah. They're pointing out in the chat room, I forgot to mention that Microsoft Office doesn't seem to be international yet. It seems to.
Oh, you know.
Which is weird.
These companies just don't. It was everywhere, but. With the 4S and 5, and now it's with the 4? Okay. I'm just reading an Apple Insider article. Well, what do I know? I don't use FaceTime.
You have to now, Leo. It's the only way to have encrypted voice communications. They
send
you that in the letter.
Right. It's safe. Let us move on to our picks of the week. I don't know if anybody told you, but we'd like to pick something that we are excited about. You have anything you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, for sure. Chad gave me the whole rundown.
Right.
I've been using about.me premium for a week now. Does that fulfill what a pick is?
That fulfills what a pick is. I actually like about.me. What does the premium service add?
Well, it's great. Like, I've been using the free one for a few years, and it easily lets you make a profile website about yourself. And the premium version allows you to connect your own domain name to it.
Ah.
So it integrates well, and you can also drop some of the advertising. So it's a really quick way to put a nice, clean website about yourself online.
So this is my about.me page.
Wow, it's much nicer than mine.
It says, I am president of the internet.
They don't do a lot of background checking.
You can say anything you want. What's nice about this is it's a good-looking kind of single page that can be your business card on the internet. Mm-hmm. And the problem was it was always about.me/your name, and now you can make it be, 9 to 5 Mac. There's Mark Gurman's. Look, I like the boat.
Thanks. That's one of the
stock
ones you can choose. Right. Yeah. And you can see, like, I don't have the top bar at the top like yours had, the about.me branding.
That's because you're pro.
Right, yeah. Right. So you get that as well if you connect your domain through the premium.
Cool. Yeah. I'm going to have to do that. How much is the premium?
There's a few different tiers, but I think they're all under $10.
Oh, it's pricey. $4 a month for the basic. Wow.
When you think about it, like, takes care of the hosting.
Right.
So only thing you're paying extra is the domain. Right. So I guess in the long run, perhaps. And it's really convenient, nice. And you can also, they have a really, really good iPhone app, so you can control the whole thing from there.
Right. Cool. All right. Yeah, it's for somebody who doesn't want to do a website, this is a good way to do it. Yep. About.me. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week, it just came out as the show was starting.
Aren't you current?
I was hoping, because sometimes I get burned. Sometimes I wait and the app gets delayed and then I have to scramble. But in this case, it actually worked out. And that might be because it's not on the Mac app. Well, I don't believe it's on the Mac App Store. It's called Chatology. It's by FlexiBits, who does Fantastical.
I love FlexiBits.
They are absolutely fantastic. And what's the nice thing about this app is if you've ever used, there's a lot of problems with messages on Mac, a lot of problems. But one of them is that if you start typing a search to find something, the whole thing just freezes. It makes iTunes look snappy and performant. And it can take forever to find anything. So what Michael and Kent did is they went in and they just started, they figured out a way to take all that data and make it instantly searchable. So you launch Chatology, start typing in stuff, and it just works. And I've had people send me pictures while I was in Chatology, and it applied to my filter term, and it just popped up in the thing. And you can choose categories, you can choose terms. They just all it's the fastest, easiest way to filter through anything that is in messages. And I've been using it so much that it's just become almost like a default window. Whenever I'm looking to remember something, I have it open and it tells me, you know, what happens. I've been beta testing it for a month and a half and it's worked flawlessly the entire time. So if you're a heavy messages on Mac user and you've been frustrated by the inability to quickly find the people you talk to or the contents of the messages, I used it to find passwords. People don't like emailing me passwords, especially for servers or for secure things. So they'll send them to me over iMessages instead. And now I can just type in a quick, you know, couple things. I get that password, or I get, you know, the name that I was missing, or the little piece of information, or the URL that I want, or the image that was sent to me. And it's not one of those big flashy apps like Fantastical that, you know, replaces an entire app, but boy, does it make it get rid of a lot of frustration and hurdles in usability.
$20, but you can try it for free at Flexibits, FlexiBits.com. Chatology. All right, I'll give it a try. Thank you. Mr. Notco, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is a fun little toy. It's called Sphero.
Oh, it's a ball.
And it's a magic happy fun ball, and it's kind of hard to demonstrate.
I have two of those.
Yeah, well, essentially, think of it as like a hamster ball, where inside this plastic ball is a little four-wheeled robot. And so when you control it via your iPhone, right now, because I don't want it to roll away, I've just got it set up to I can – through the iPhone, I can just change its color. But you put it on the ground and it will roll in any direction you want. You can steer it. As a matter of fact, when I was just configuring it about 10 minutes ago, you know, I set it on the ground and it just rolled away because it has to verify now, did I just roll away from you? Say, yes, you did, but now I'm in my chair and I can't get, oh, wait a minute. This is a robot. I could actually like just pilot it around the room and steer it right back to the chair. This is fun. So it's just, it's a $99 toy. And there are a lot of robots you can buy for less than $99. But the cool thing is that this is a ball that you can like put in a bag or put in a pocket, and you've got your phone with you all the time. So you can use it in so many different ways and so many different places. And also, there are a bunch of games that they've opened up APIs so that third parties can develop games for it. And some of them are pretty cool. There's a game in which this on the ground is not just simply the Sphero, like little robot. It's actually uses a color to use the camera of your iPad or your iPhone as a marker of here's where I should now draw in this live video of your actual living room or your driveway a picture of a scampering rodent. So you're actually basically controlling a cartoon rodent that in video is just walking and running all through your house. So as a ball, it's just a whole bunch of fun. This comes in the category of something that I was sent in a box by a PR company and then put it aside. And I started playing with it and then started playing more with it because it is happy fun ball. So
how many balls do you have?
One, but it's pretty big. I'm sorry.
So do you need more than one? I mean, could you just play with one?
You can play with just one. You can play in teams, each one with a different paired to a different Bluetooth phone. There are also games that use this basically as a controller that will sense your position and as you're shaking and as you're moving it around. There are only about a couple dozen games, I think, in the iOS App Store that use it. It's also available for Android, by the way. There's also an Android app for it as well. But it's just, you know, deceptively fun. It's not until you actually have one that you realize that, okay, this would be kind of fun thing to screw around with. I'm glad it didn't arrive about a month and a half ago when I was traveling for like a week and traveling through like multiple airports, because the temptation to just have this in my bag and just use it to amuse myself waiting for, you know, an hour and 10 minutes in the terminal for my flight would have been far, far too much for an immature person like me to turn down. I'd have to be talking to like a 53-year-old person. Hi, mister, can I have my ball back? It rolled beyond rolled past your piece of luggage there.
Now I want all of them.
Yeah, they're fun. I saw them a couple of years ago at CES. They've been rolling around. They get better and better. Macworld, I think it was at Macworld, actually. Yep. We saw this Sphero, S-P-H-E-R-O, Sphero. In fact, did we do a review on Before You Buy? I think we did. Let's see if we can find the episode number. My tip is actually for anybody who's afraid of the NSA spying on their email. I've been trying to get people to use PGP forever. And then later the open source version, GNU Privacy Guard, or GPG. Now there is a really easy way to use it on Apple Mail, and I highly recommend it. This couldn't be simpler. It now works with Mountain Lion. You know, it's an open source project, so, you know, it comes and goes. This is from gpgtools.org, absolutely free. You'll download it, install it. What it will do is it will generate a new key pair, public and private key, install it in your OS X keychain, and automatically add to Apple Mail the ability to encrypt and sign your mail. So a new GPG mail setting is in your preferences. You can easily sign all your mail, which I have done for years. Once you generate the key pair, it's a good idea to upload the key pair to a key server. You might have a key signing party, get other people who know it's you for sure to sign your key. So if you find a key that is Leo at leoville.com and has a comment, twit.tv/Leo in it, and I should give you some more information so I can get you to sign my key, actually, people who are watching at home. I know a lot of people are familiar with the idea of PGP. What's cool is if you get an email from me, it should be signed by me. You'll see it adds the private and public key into the keychain here. And you can add other people's keys to your keychain. Mine is 898-98B67. So if you see a key with a short ID, 898-98B67, would you do me a favor and say, yeah, that's Leo. I heard him say it on the Twit network. Now, if somebody sends me their public key in a signature of an email or so forth, now we can have encrypted conversations that not even the NSA can peer into. It's very easy. The installer, it works perfectly smoothly. Highly recommended. If you're still using Apple Mail, I know a lot of you now have moved to webmail, and that's unfortunate because I don't know of a good way to do this yet in Gmail on the web. But if you use Apple Mail, it's a really simple, easy way to add encryption and signing. Signing's important, too, to verify you sent that email to all of your mail. Highly recommended. It's from gpgtools.org, and it is free. There are solutions for Gmail. Tuffeldog says Mailvelope is one.
You think it'd be possible, Leo? A good friend of mine keeps asking me this. What if Apple or Google could just start installing this by default and making it work in such a way that it spawns mainstream adoption of it?
I wish they would. Outlook has the capability to do S/MIME secure encryption using certificates. And it's, but it's not turned on to my knowledge anywhere. And I think it would really be nice.
I like my mom to be secure without having to install all this stuff.
Well, you know, what happens when I do it?
That is one hell of a lemon bar recipe. You're
correct. Yeah. No, but the point is, if everybody uses encrypted mail and secure mail, then it doesn't, it's not a red flag anymore. So it's very simple for me to, once you install it, you'll see when I create a new message, I've got just a built-in thing here that I can digitally sign by clicking that. And you see, it gives me a chance to do it with OpenPGP or S/MIME. Those are both industry standards. I can also, if I'm sending it to somebody whose key I have, public key I have, encrypt it. And so these two buttons just get added automatically to every message you send out. And by default, I assign everything that I send out. Some of this exists on other platforms. I think Samsung smartphones have mail signing as well. And it's a good thing. You can export your keys. You could put your public key somewhere. People can download it, like on a web page. I've always kept my public key on my Leoville account. Or you can search the MIT key server. There are many key servers out there, PGP key servers. Then say, hey, what is Leo's key? And find it and then encrypt mail to me, because that's a way to get my public key as well. The private key is... password protected or pass better yet, passphrase protected. You probably don't want to distribute it. Nevertheless, your public key you can distribute widely. I could actually put it on the screen here. Maybe I put it in a QR code, something like that. I think it might be too long for that. But please, you know, if you're worried about privacy, there are tools. I don't even think your mom would have too much trouble getting this to work. They've really made it easy now. GPGtools.org. I want to thank our panelists. Mark, I want to thank you for coming. I hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Nice to have the young folk occasionally on the show. But you got to be more forceful with this crowd because we're big talkers.
No.
Get just assertiveness. That's all. Assertiveness. It was great having you. We read you all the time. We're always quoting you. So thanks for doing such a great job. And we'll have you back real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks to Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. You guys are doing your event right now. I saw Callie and John posting some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And Leo is going to be on Talk Mobile tomorrow. So if you want to see Leo's contribution, which was awesome, thank you very much for that, Leo. It'll be on TalkMobile2013.com tomorrow. And it's all about apps and the future of HTML5 and cross-platform and a lot of fun stuff.
It's hosted by Mobile Nations, presented by BlackBerry, an online event spanning the Mobile Nations network. So it covers Android, BlackBerry, Windows, as well as iOS. A lot of fun.
And the
fun.
Best thing that we did is, like, we usually have all these separate sites, like iMore and Android Central, and no one talks to each other. Right. So we built this new comment system where no matter which site you're on, all your comments are together. So, and we're not asking you to fight about platform. We're asking about bigger issues that apply to all of us. So it's working really well. We're getting amazing comments on the articles.
Excellent. Well done. Talk, what is it? TalkMobile2013.com?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Renee. See you next week. Thanks to Andy Yanotko as well. Andy, now looking back, or do you feel bad that you didn't get to WWDC?
Not really, because I was able to get all my coverage in. There was a lot of stuff going on, but not a whole lot that I felt that I missed that I would be able to write about. And there were plenty of opportunities in the past week for me to get that information anyway. Yeah. So,
absent a hands-on demo lab, there's really you don't need to be there.
Yeah, I mean, the fall event, I think, is really important, extremely yes. valuable to get to. Yes. The other one, if you can arrange, as for someone who does the sort of writing that I do, where I have to be free to be writing about various subjects, you have to really do a lot of work in advance to make sure that you have lots of other things that you can visit and take care of over there. And also the fact that there's also two different Sony and Microsoft all keynoting it at E3, there would have been a considerable Crazy. Amount of pain for me to be. It's like there's nothing. The only thing to match the joy of being in San Francisco at WWDC with so much interesting stuff going on and so many of my friends there is the absolute abject displeasure of saying, "Hi, yeah, I really wish that I could go out to dinner with you, being my first time here in 8 months, but I have to stay here and watch something on live stream and write about it in my hotel. That's why I came to San Francisco, to stay in my hotel and work."
This is the only thing you missed. Is the size of the Mac Pro, and you're now seeing it. So you're done. You didn't even get to handle it.
Secret weapon, gaffer tape.
Well, I'll tell you what. We will fly you out this fall. How about that? If Apple should happen to have an event, we'll bring you out.
We will plan on that.
All right.
It's.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly whenever the hell I get here, but it's usually sometime between 11 and noon on Tuesday, that specific time. That's around 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Tune in and join us live if you can. If you can't, don't worry. We make on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer podcasts are stored, aggregated, and dispersed to the general populace. Thank you for being here. Now get back to work because break time is over.